This is Margaret Cho, and you're listening to the Bicast, podcasting for the bisexual community.
Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast for the bisexual community. Today we have Suzanne Van Rowan. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Almost. Quite close. Suzanne Van Rowan.
Thank you. With us today, she is the author of The Other Me, and this is a great little book. Welcome.
Thank you.
Suzanne, you're an author, obviously. Can we just hear a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, if you can tell from my surname, I'm originally from South Africa. That's an Afrikaans name. But I've lived in various places all over the world, Australia, Finland, and now I'm in Sweden. And I never actually planned to become an author. I've studied music. I did my master's in music, mind, and technology, which is basically all the science stuff behind music. And the writing kind of happened accidentally because I just really enjoyed writing stories. Mm-hmm. And then a Finnish friend of mine introduced me to NaNoWriMo, and I attempted and failed miserably my first NaNoWriMo. But eventually I had a manuscript from that, and I started submitting it to publishers, horribly green about the industry, but ended up getting a publishing contract from that. And that kind of kicked off my authorly side.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, was that with, is it Month Press or Month 9?
No. The first book that I had published was Dragon's Teeth, and that's with Diverter Publishing.
Okay. We always like to plug, if it was like an independent publisher or anything like that, we always like to give them a shout out. But right now you're with Harmony Inc. Is it Month 9?
Yes. Yeah. Harmony Inc. published The Other Me and Month 9 Books, which is a dedicated science fiction, fantasy, and horror publisher. Mm-hmm. They've got my new book called I Heart Robot, which is coming out at the end of March.
Oh, I can't wait for that. So let's talk about a little bit about the book and the characters, two main characters.
Sure.
Is it Teresa and Gabriel, right?
Yes, it is.
Right. And Teresa, we don't want to give too much away. Teresa's pretty sure she's an alien. And I love that. She's always going through these tests about it. Can we hear a little bit about the premise?
Sure. Well, the book is based largely on my own personal experiences in high school at this Catholic all-girls school. And there was a stage when I was 14 that I just didn't fit in socially with the crowd and believed that I was an alien because that could only be the only possible explanation. And it was kind of that, little personal nugget from my own experience that started this story, which is about this girl who doesn't fit in and doesn't understand why she's so uncomfortable in her own skin. And it's only by meeting Gabriel, who is a very talented musician, and they connect through their love of music, that she sort of starts discovering who she really is. And at the same time, she also helps Gabriel on his journey because he's a boy with lots of problems and many things that he also has to overcome. So together they kind of discover who they really are, who they want to be, and kind of overcome these inner demons.
It's fantastic. I love it. It's presented in such a fun way.
I'm glad you think so.
I do. I haven't gotten a chance to read very far, and I guess that's good because I can't offer too many spoilers, but I can't wait to hear more about Gabrielle and Teresa's stories. I've gotten as far as that. I know that her mother likes to bake.
Yes, as a stress reaction.
Yes, as a stress reaction. And Gabrielle's rather rocky relationship with his father, and kind of guilt over his mom. So I'm really enjoying these characters, and I can't wait to see how they resolve their separate issues. And you offer so many rich characters in the book. Gabriel's friend Dirk is fascinating to me.
Yeah, he is. He's good fun.
He is good fun. It looks like a really incredible and sensitive journey at looking at body dysphoria, self-acceptance, and, of course, self-hate. And like I said in the book, gender and sexual orientation is really presented as not as black and white as we think it is, and thus challenges a bit.
Yes,
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and it's I think it's quite topical because South Africa as a country, although on paper they look very good when it comes to LGBT rights, you know, they were one of the first countries to allow same-sex marriage. So on paper they look really good, but in practice there isn't as much acceptance yet. There are still big problems in certain communities. Within the black communities, LGBT people are not nearly as well accepted or as well integrated as you might find in some of the other communities and cultures in South Africa. Because South Africa really is such a melting pot of different cultures and different viewpoints and worldviews. So it is quite difficult to find that kind of common ground or acceptance for people who are a little bit outside of the mold. And that's why I wanted to set it in South Africa, because I grew up there, and even though we're kind of nicknamed the Rainbow Nation, that doesn't always extend in terms of tolerance and acceptance of LGBT people.
That's great. I'm glad you presented that. And I do appreciate the fact that you gave us a glossary at the beginning.
That was my publisher's suggestion, yes.
It does help quite a bit for us, especially us in the States, because I don't know, I didn't know what, is it OAK? Is that how you say it?
OAK?
O-K-E?
Yeah, that's kind of our word for a guy or like a friend.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know what that was. And is that Afrikaans?
Yeah, a lot of the slang that they use in the other me is Afrikaans, because Gabriel and his crowd are actually Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm.
So technically his whole perspective should be written in Afrikaans, because Trees is the English one. But my Afrikaans is not nearly good enough to attempt that. And I mean, for an American audience, that obviously it needed to be in English. So a lot of their slang is actually Afrikaans. But in general, the South African slang is quite unique in that it pulls all sorts from various African languages as well, to the point where we don't even know the origins of the words. Many of us use this word dacha, which is the slang word for marijuana in South Africa, and many people think that it's Afrikaans, but it actually originally comes from the Khoisan language, which is one of the most ancient. They're like the oldest people on the African continent. So we have, as I've said, like a melting pot, and we draw so much from different cultures and different languages.
Yeah. It's kind of how we are in the States. We don't always know where we get some of our slang language, because we are kind of a melting pot here too.
Oh, for sure. And I guess, you know, you have such a big Spanish influence in certain parts of the States as well.
Oh, yes. And, you know, a lot of the German language is seeped in, and Italian, and all different kinds of things. You guys have a heavy Dutch influence, is that right?
Heavy Dutch and heavy English, as in British influence.
Yeah.
In the country.
British.
Yeah.
I read James Mitchell's The Covenant years ago, so... That's pretty much what I'm basing my information about South Africa on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was pretty heavy duty.
I can imagine. But I think people forget that aside from the colonial aspect of, you know, the British Afrikaans, British and Dutch influence, that we also have a huge Indian population in South Africa.
Yeah.
And they bring all of the Indian culture. We have many, many Hindus, Tamil, you name it. You know, influencing culture, and the food is just amazing. And so much of traditional Indian food has just become a staple in South Africa, like the samosas and like curry. And I grew up eating those as South African food. I didn't know that it wasn't kind of European South African food.
Yeah, so we have curry here, but it's not like a staple. It's kind of like a special thing. So, but at years, it was like part of your diet, right?
Yeah, and it was just, you know, typical that everybody grew up, you know, eating samosas and eating curry and knowing what those were. And then, of course, in the Cape, there's this very particular culture, the Cape Malay, or as we say, coloured culture as well, which is kind of its own thing with its own language and cultural traits. And that's fascinating, but I don't know very much about it because I haven't lived in the Cape, so I haven't been as exposed to that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the book?
I think the problem with writing a book like this, because it was greatly inspired by my own experiences, is that people then tend to view it in one of two ways. They either see it as fiction and try to kind of discover the autobiographical content.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they view it as an autobiography and they forget that it's fiction. And although it started from an autobiographical seed, it really isn't. And the way I described it, because I was in South Africa just last June, and I gave a talk about this to a gender support group, an LGBT support group at one of the universities, and said that although it kind of started out as this cathartic exercise for myself in terms of gender identity, at some point those characters became their own people and kind of took over the story. And it wasn't about me anymore. It was very much about Teresa and very much about Gabriel. And I kind of had to surrender my own personal feelings about it or personal experiences and kind of hand over to the characters, which I think was, you know, the big watershed moment for me when I was writing this book. And I think the greatest catharsis actually came from being able to give the story to these characters rather than trying to keep it like almost like a journal or very, very super personal. Because then I could explore and then I could expand. And that's, you know, when Jordan and Dirk kind of came into their own once I'd sort of released the story.
That, I think that's a sign of a very good writer. We really appreciate that. And Yeah, no, I think so. It's very well done. It's awesome. I just started writing a little bit, and I know that it is a cathartic experience, but also very painful at times. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Oh, it is. And with this story in particular, because I remember so clearly being quite bitter about some of my experiences in South Africa. And I mean, I left South Africa 6.5 years ago, and I had some very strong reasons for doing that. And I wasn't eager to go back to the country, and I kind of had a lot of residual resentment from some of the experiences that I had there. And when I was writing this book, there were days when I was just so angry writing it, or really, really sad, like constantly on the, you know, on the verge of tears when I was writing it. So I think this book is so much more than just an LGBT story, at least from my angle. And I wish I could explain that to people when they read it, but it's not actually important. I think it's fantastic that I can just put this book out there and kind of wash my hands of it in a way, and then I give it to other people and allow them the chance to interact with it the way that they want to. And if it means something to them, that's great. And if it doesn't, well, so be it. You know.
Well, I think it's going to mean a lot to a lot of people, because people that are going through these kind of experiences need to relate to other people. And this is a great, great story. I think it's going to be a great help. So thank you.
Well, thank you for saying those things. It's interesting because I've had kind of mixed responses, especially from other people in the LGBT community. I've had some people kind of jump on it and being like, you know, this is fantastic. This echoes my experiences. You know, I completely relate to what Teresa's going through, or I completely relate to what Gabriel's going through, even though his journey isn't so much about sexuality and gender identity. There's a lot going on for him. Mm-hmm. And then others, you know, have been a bit more critical about it. Said, you know, there's some cliches in it or some stereotypes, or, you know, it didn't feel as authentic because Teresa on this journey should have behaved in a certain way to fit what is expected of people going through her journey. I was really happy when people said that it was cliched or stereotyped, because going into this novel, I was kind of learning the vocabulary for myself and understanding my own queerness while I was writing this book. So the fact that other people then read it and was like, oh, that's cliché or that's stereotypical, I kind of felt like, yes, there are other people out there who feel the same as me. And I didn't really know that until I
got the
response, you know, to the book. And then from the other angle, you know, the people who are sort of kind of policing the gender identity or the journey that you are supposed to go on, that I can't agree with, because everybody is so different. And I don't think that we should, as an LGBT community, try to police how people express themselves or how they label themselves or should label themselves based on what some kind of arcane criteria defined by I don't know who.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that there is that element, but I totally agree that policing sexual and gender identity is pretty damaging to begin with, and shouldn't be done. So I really agree with you. We're so diverse, and everybody has their own story and identity, and it's, you know, people need, that's what I think people need to understand, is quit trying to shove people into boxes, but everybody has their own special box, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you want to be in this box one day and be in another box the other day,
yeah,
that's okay. Or if you just, you know, like me as a teenager, I had no idea that the boxes even existed in the first place.
Uh-huh.
Never mind where I kind of fitted. And I think that, you know, especially younger kids and teenagers need to know that it's okay not to have it figured out.
You don't have to be in any box, really. You can just, you know, be somewhere in between that, you know.
Yeah, and you don't have to be 16 and understand who you are yet. You know, it can be a gradual journey, and your mind can change, and you can change, or the way that you identify. And, you know, you're not just this person at a certain age, and that's the way you're going to stay. We all evolve as people.
And I have to really agree with you, because I remember Teresa, Teresa hasn't even hit 16 yet.
She hasn't.
So worried about figuring herself out, and I remember that too. And I certainly didn't have all of that figured out, even about my sexual orientation at 16. And I thought it was so important to do that, and that caused problems for me all my life. So, you know, just relax, everyone. It's okay. It's a journey.
Yeah, and it's surprising, because of course there are some people who just know who they are intrinsically from a very young age. You know, even some kids who from the age of 2 or 3 identify as transgender, and that's fantastic for them that they figure it out so early. But then there are also so many other people that I've spoken to who only realized or came to the understanding that they were trans or non-binary or gay or lesbian, like in their 20s, 30s, even 40s.
Mm-hmm. Or bisexual like me.
Oh, of course,
In my 50s.
And I think that's amazing. I think, you know, you have to give people the freedom to do that and to change and to, you know, not have these static lives where they're dictated to by some decision they made as a child, which they thought was the right decision. Because at 16, 18, you are still a child.
Yeah, you are able to make really rational decisions. But it's not over yet. You don't have to stay with one thought. You don't have to put yourself in that box, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, and we do evolve. You know, I know we do. You know, I'm 57, and I've evolved a lot.
But that's the beauty of life, and I think to try to stifle that growth is the mistake people make.
I agree with you so much. I really do. So anything else you'd like to add today?
I don't think specifically, other than that iHeartRobot is coming soon, which is a quirky science fiction novel set in a futuristic Scandinavia. And although my main character isn't technically LGBT because he's a robot, there is definitely some greater exploration of themes there. So you'll have to look out for that in the book.
I can't wait for that, because I'm a real science fiction fan, so I'll be looking forward to that.
Oh, fantastic.
And then we're going to go ahead and wrap up now. And I just want to remind everybody, you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, and you don't have to stay in the boxes. Goodbye. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.